Hi, it's Patrick Cox here. And the last time we did a thing in the podcast about learning the language of your enemy, it was about two sets of people who knew virtually nothing about each other's language and culture, the British and the Japanese. The British, during World War II, in a great panic, needed to train up a few people to learn Japanese because, well, no one in Britain understood Japanese. They didn't understand what the enemy was saying. But in the podcast today, it's the opposite, and maybe a more common situation. It's when you're right next door to your enemy, like in the Middle East, Palestinians and Israelis. And when Palestinians learn Hebrew and Israelis learn Arabic, they're not just learning the language of the enemy.
The way they teach Arabic in the army, it's actually for know thy enemy, in order for you to be able to stop the next explosion or something like that. You always say that. You tend to forget that it's a language that is also a part of a system which is alive and which is something that has to do with people.
She is very enthusiastic about learning Hebrew. And when I asked her why, she said that in Gaza, a lot of the cosmetic products, the labels are in Hebrew. And she said she kept buying shampoo for dry hair. And then she would wash her hair, and her hair kept coming out really bad. And she knew that she was using the wrong type of shampoo for her dry hair. Now she knows Hebrew, and she goes shopping, and she looks at the labels.
Israel and the territories and countries around it, these are places where people have a huge amount in common. They share habits. They share recipes. They share music. In this case, a song sung in Arabic by three women of Yemeni background that's recently been a huge hit in Israel. Shayna Sheely is a reporter who spent some of the last year in the Middle East. She's also spent a lot of time studying the history and culture of the Middle East. And of course, she's come across many, many points of cultural contact between Israelis and Arabs. Shayna has also met two linguists who study the, quote, enemy's language. Two guys who are authorities on each other's languages, who live just a few dozen miles away from each other, one in Israel, the other in Gaza. The Israeli linguist, Arik Sadan, Shayna first met him at Hebrew University in Jerusalem in 2013. She was studying for a master's degree in Islamic and Middle Eastern studies.
And Arik Sadan was my Arabic teacher. He was my first Arabic teacher.
And just to be clear, he's Jewish, right? He is not an Arab.
Correct. Arik Sadan is Jewish. He has really light skin, and he's tall and lanky. He has long arms, really light green eyes, and his cheeks are rosy.
هل زرت إسرائيل هذه السنة؟
Here he is teaching an Arabic class in Jerusalem. Sadan's research specialty is Arabic's use of the subjunctive tense, something he just happens to be one of the world's authorities on. Yeah, he's pretty nerdy. Sadan chose to study Arabic in seventh grade. He was lucky to have an inspirational teacher, a man who Sadan says lived the language.
He brought a finjan, which had Arabic coffee, and he drank it with a lot of noise, something like, and everyone laughed, and then he expected the laughter, and then he said, what are you laughing about? This is the way Arabs drink. They enjoy coffee, not like you Jews.
After his first Arabic lesson, the 12-year-old Sadan made a toy out of plastic googly eyes glued onto cardboard in a fuzzball. He gave it to his mother, Drora, after writing an inscription in two languages.
It so surprised me. Not that he wrote in Hebrew, for my mother with love, but in Arabic. It was very unusual. Why in Arabic?
Drora says other family members and friends have questioned his decision to study and then make a career out of Arabic.
They know him, that he can study whatever he likes. Computer, physics, mathematics. They always say, so it's not the only Arabic, yes? No, I told them, the grammar of Arabic.
Not just the language, but how it works. That has been Sadan's interest, and how close it is to his native tongue, Hebrew. The two languages share many root words and follow similar grammatical patterns.
It shows the same way of thinking, and it shows the way that the people speaking these languages can be actually closer to each other, like the languages.
Sadan says he was lucky to learn Arabic in the 80s when Jews and Arabs had more chances to meet. Now, though, the status of Arabic has changed. Although it's an official language in Israel, fewer Jewish Israelis study it. Sadan believes that Jews are turning their backs on a language that used to be central to their culture.
1,000 years ago, Jews and Arabs worked together, compared the biblical scriptures, discussed things in Arabic. If a person says that Arabic is a lousy language, it means that the heritage of this person, the Jewish person, is also lousy. Because the Jewish heritage, a great percentage of it, is Arabic.
So there's this strong connection, Shaina, between Arabic and Hebrew, just like he says. But fewer Hebrew speakers learning Arabic. That seems amazing. Even in spite of all of the conflict, Arabs and Israelis have lived in each other's pockets for so long. So who now in Israel is learning Arabic?
So by 12th grade, at the end of their education, only 3% of Israeli students take their matriculation exams in the subject. So it's a very small group of people who study Arabic in high school. And many of them choose to study Arabic because they want to be placed in certain units during their mandatory army service.
That's interesting. So are they trying to avoid active duty? Is that part of the deal here, that they have the possibility of getting a desk job instead if they learn Arabic?
Possibly. And also, a job in intelligence or security in the army is a little bit more prestigious than some of the other jobs. So that's also a possibility. I spoke with many of Arik Sadan's current students in university. All of them started studying Arabic in high school with the motivation to do Arabic in the army. But now a lot of them have changed. Once you start studying Arabic in university, it's a little bit different. Arik Sadan does not teach his students militarized Arabic. He teaches more about the grammar, and he teaches from literary sources. He uses the Quran in his curriculum. One of Sadan's students I spoke with, his name is Yonatan. He's 26, and he started studying Arabic in high school so that he could be in an intelligence unit during his army service.
The way they teach Arabic in the army, it's actually for know thy enemy, in order for you to be able to stop the next explosion or something like that. They always say that. You tend to forget that it's a language. That is also a part of a system which is alive and which is something that has to do with people.
After he finished his army service, Yonatan went to university and met Arabs in Sudan's syntax class. And he changed.
Until that time, I always thought of them as the Arabs that hate Jews. And because I learned that there's a different Arab, I saw the need for me to learn the language and to see what they really think. And if they do think badly of us, then maybe I could influence them and convince them otherwise.
That's the kind of attitude Sadan is trying to foster in his students. You can't be a good linguist, he says, if your starting point is to stereotype groups of people.
I think it's important that an opinion which is really racist is to say all Jews are or all Arabs are. It doesn't make sense. In languages, you can never say always it's like this or never it's like this. Languages are like life.
Sadan can't always get visas to travel to conferences abroad, especially in parts of the Arab world where Israelis are not welcome, even experts on Arabic. And he gets it. Many Israeli Arabic speakers who look like him learned Arabic for security and intelligence. So he understands that colleagues abroad may be suspicious of him. But Sadan just wishes more Israeli Jews would embrace this fascinating language.
I sometimes say as a joke or as a bad joke or a sad joke that I only wish that the Hebrew people and the Arab people would be a bit close as the languages, only 10% close as the languages are.
At home in Israel too, Sadan says he sometimes feels intimidated. I ask him who he feels intimidated by.
By people around me, Jewish people. Today, unlike 10 or 20 or 30 years ago, the Arabic language is considered the language of the enemy. And if you speak Arabic, it might necessarily mean that you are a part of the enemy, which is ridiculous.
Earlier this year, Sadan made a presentation at a conference in Belgium. There was a scholar there from Lebanon. The two bonded over, what else? Language. The Lebanese linguist had found some ancient Hebrew manuscripts in a library in Beirut. Sadan helped him translate them, and after that they vowed to stay in touch. They exchanged email addresses. Gmail, of course. Writing to each other's institutional addresses might cause trouble. They laughed about the underhand arrangement, but it was a poignant moment. The recognition that even the most innocent trading of linguistic ideas was subject to the rules of the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Well, I guess it's good to hear that, you know, there are always ways of getting around these rather silly official impediments. But it really is crazy that there are such impediments. And I wonder, Shaina, is it becoming worse? Is it becoming more difficult for Arik Sudan to have these kinds of contacts with his counterparts, these linguists from the Arab world?
You know, I don't really have a great sense of if it's becoming more difficult for Sudan. I did speak with many of his Israeli colleagues who teach Arabic, and many of them were concerned about the growing limitations for Sudan as his career progresses. An interesting thing, when I started doing this story, and I go to journalism school, so I was pitching this story to classmates and professors, and they always asked me, well, is he in the Mossad? And I was like, no, he just loves Arabic. And they were like, really?
Just to clarify, the Mossad is the Israeli Secret Service.
Yes. And my answer was, of course not. Arik Sudan loves Arabic. He wants to teach this language to bring people closer together. And everyone was like, how do you know that? How do you know he's not in Mossad? And I think it's hard because people, Israelis who study Arabic, who look like Arik Sudan, many of them do study for intelligence and security. So my sense is that it's difficult for him. But when he talks about it, he's very humble. He's pretty confident about his career. He hasn't run into any roadblocks yet. And I think in a way, he understands that people are suspicious of him. And he uses his knowledge of the language to repair those suspicions.
So that begs the question, what about the other side? What about Arab academics, Palestinian academics in particular, who have learned Hebrew, who teach Hebrew? What about them?
So in Israel, Gaza, and the West Bank, there are very few Palestinians who teach Hebrew on an academic level. When I started this project, I set out to find Arik Sudan's counterpart. I searched for Palestinians who are teaching Hebrew to Palestinians. I have a friend. Her name is Abir Ayoub. She's a journalist in Gaza, and she writes for some Israeli publications. So I know that she knows Hebrew. So I asked her how she knows Hebrew or if she knows any Hebrew teachers, and she told me about Sobi Bahlul. Sobi Bahlul is Gaza's main Hebrew teacher. There are 12 Hebrew teachers in Gaza, and Sobi trained all of them. He studied Hebrew at Tel Aviv University, received a master's degree in 2002. He is the only Gazan to study Hebrew at Tel Aviv University. He spoke about Hebrew in the same way that Sudan spoke about Arabic, which was this deep love of the language and of the patterns and the grammar and the vocabulary, which is so interesting to me because it's a language and I'm bad at languages. That's sort of the counterpart thing.
That's interesting. I mean, you say you're bad at languages. It sounds like these two linguists are both kind of bad about, I don't know, career choice or, you know, facts on the ground. So, they both seem to be sort of living in this incredibly admirable world of adoring the other's native tongue, but on the other hand, it's fraught with difficulty as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And Sobi Bahlul, he teaches so many Hebrew classes. He teaches private lessons. He teaches at a few universities in Gaza. And here's what Bahlul says about his students who study Hebrew.
I encourage all kinds of peoples, all different categories and ages and colors, political, I mean. I encourage all of them. Because if you understand your enemy, it helps and facilitates the mission. It's never mind if the mission is military or socially or education. If we understand each other, it's good.
So Sobi Bahlul, he developed Gaza's entire Hebrew curriculum. So he had friends in Israel who would send him the Hebrew, they're called Ulpan books. So his friends in Israel sent him those books, and Bahlul built Gaza's Hebrew curriculum off of these Israeli Hebrew books.
Oh, that's interesting. And Israeli Hebrew books, presumably, are they for outsiders, or are they for, who are they aimed at? They're presumably not aimed at Palestinians.
Right. So Israel's Hebrew curriculum, it's for new immigrants to Israel. A lot of Americans, Russians, whatever, people who move to Israel who want to learn Hebrew. So there's been a lot of research on these books and how not only do they teach the Hebrew language, but also try to instill a sense of Israeli nationhood, identity, history, and pride. And some of the narratives included in those books are not narratives that are accepted throughout the world, especially throughout the Arab world. And so Bahlul had to modify these books to fit the narrative in Gaza, so that people who were learning Hebrew wouldn't become outraged by what they were reading. For example, he says that the Islamic and biblical narratives of the Passover story are different. But one of the cool things about using Israeli Hebrew books is that a lot of them have cultural references. It's important to Bahlul that his students learn those cultural references. He wants his students to know how to say Happy Holiday, which is Chag Sameach in Hebrew. He teaches his students how to say Shabbat Shalom, which is a greeting said during the Sabbath in Israel.
What about his students? What kind of students want to learn Hebrew? You know, and why are they learning it?
Yeah, so when I met with Bahlul in Gaza, I also met with 9 of his Hebrew students, and they had a lot of different motivations. Some of them were journalists, businessmen. Some of them wanted to learn Hebrew so that they could be teachers. And most of them also recognized the importance of knowing Hebrew for self-defense. Many Gazans may have interactions with Israeli soldiers, and many of them believe that Hebrew can help them if they're in trouble. So one of his students, his name is Ashraf Bahloj, he's 40, and he learned basic Hebrew during his 21 years in an Israeli prison. And now he studies Bahlul to learn Hebrew more formally. When he was in prison, he said that the Israelis treated Palestinians not as if they were humans, but as if they were bugs or insects. But in prison, when he started to speak with his jailers in Hebrew, he said that something changed and they started respecting him, and they could talk about football and they could talk about things that they were watching on the TV, and it created a human relationship which did not exist before. And Bahloj recognizes the power of that, and he wants to arm Gazan youth with this skill. He said that he believes that the level of hatred might go down if people talk to each other, which I think is the power of language that these two teachers really understand.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference. I mean, the moment you can humanize a situation by just being able to speak the same language, it's a cliche, but it really does seem to work. I wonder if Bahlul has come across this as well. I mean, you mentioned that he studied in Tel Aviv, but since then, he must have come across, as everybody who lives in Gaza does, he must have come across potentially violent confrontations with Israeli guys in uniform.
Yeah, Bahlul has this great story about this time during the Second Intifada, during which Israeli soldiers would come into Gaza, and they had a policy of cleaning up the streets and asking local residents to pick their trash up off the floor and to scrub graffiti from the walls. And Bahlul had an interesting encounter with some of these soldiers. He was renovating his apartment and had all this trash outside of his house because they were completely redoing it. And the soldiers drove by and started banging on the door and asking him, you know, whose house is this? Whose trash is this? And
I started to speak Hebrew. Rega, as he said to me, just a minute, do you speak Hebrew? Yes, I speak Hebrew. I am a Hebrew teacher. Really? Yes. Where did you learn? How did you learn? And they forgot the subject of this rubbish. And one of them, the leader of the group, he said, okay, you go and collect all the people and let them clean it and leave Subh for me.
And it led to this really funny, nice encounter, which ultimately led to a lasting relationship in which these soldiers came to his house. And every time the soldiers were in the neighborhood, they'd come over and sit with Bahlul and drink coffee and chat in Hebrew.
Wow, that's quite a story. All made possible by a common language and the signal that speaking that language sends. Nowadays, of course, making that kind of connection is even less possible. The Israeli soldiers are gone, and they've also sealed Gaza off from Israel. So no conversations over tea between Palestinian civilians in Gaza and Israeli soldiers, and even less likely, contacts between civilians living in Gaza and civilians in Israel. So Shaina, do you know if these two linguists, these two guys who live in these similar worlds across this divide, I wonder if they know each other?
They do not know each other. As a naive beginner journalist in the region, my vision for this story was to do a profile on each guy and then at the end get them together and get them in conversation and have them talk about their love for the language. When I told people about this idea, once I was in Israel and once I was in Gaza, people just laughed. It's not possible. It's not possible for them to know each other. They can talk on the phone, they can talk on Skype, but right now it's impossible for Bahlul and Sudan to meet face to face.
So it's not so much, I mean, one would have thought that they, under, quote, normal circumstances, they probably would know each other. I mean, they're both leading linguists. Mm-hmm. But they don't know each other in part, you're suggesting, because there just isn't any kind of a forum for them to get to know each other, for them to even meet.
There's no forum for them to meet, and there are also barriers in place that prevent Sudan from traveling into the West Bank or Gaza, and Bahlul can no longer come into Israel like he did before 2007. So yeah, there he cannot come into Israel.
So what about their students? What about people in Gaza learning Hebrew and people in Israel learning Arabic? Can they make any kind of contact with each other?
So in Israel, the Israelis who learn Arabic have ample opportunities to speak Arabic with native Arabic speakers. In fact, many Jewish Israelis are native Arabic speakers. They come from Arab countries. But many Israeli students who study Arabic might be afraid of speaking Arabic because of the stereotypes that exist in that culture. For Gazans, it's a little bit of a different story. There aren't many chances to speak Hebrew with a real live Israeli. But one of the great things, of course, is Facebook. A lot of the Hebrew students I spoke with in Gaza said that they have Facebook friends in Israel who they chat with in Hebrew. And one of the students I spoke with, her name is Jehan. She's in her 40s, and she chats with me in Hebrew. She also keeps her cell phone in Hebrew. It's sort of like the modern version of pen pals.
Pen pals, Facebook, that's all people have. But if there's one person who's really making the most of that state of affairs, it's Jehan, that student of Hebrew who Shaina just mentioned. Shaina originally met her when she went to Gaza to interview Hebrew students.
She is very enthusiastic about learning Hebrew. And when I asked her why, she talked about her hair and her skin. She said that in Gaza, a lot of the cosmetic products, the labels are in Hebrew and the ingredients are in Hebrew. And she said she kept buying shampoo for dry hair. And then she would wash her hair and her hair was horrible. It kept coming out really bad. And she knew that she was using the wrong type of shampoo for her dry hair. And she said she asked the shopkeeper, but she knows that the shopkeeper doesn't know Hebrew either, so he was just making things up off the top of his head. Now she knows Hebrew, and she goes shopping, and she looks at the labels. And when there's a word on a label that she doesn't know, she calls her Hebrew teacher, Bahlul, and asks him to explain it. And she says, you know, we're ladies. At the end of the day, we're ladies. And she wants to buy the appropriate cosmetics for her hair and skin. Jehan, this woman, during the interview, we had a really, like, a nice connection. We laughed a lot. We laughed about the skin products. And then after the interview, once I was back in Israel, she friended me on Facebook and, you know, would send me, like, funny, like, heart emojis and smiley faces and these nice messages in Hebrew about how it was so nice to meet me and how, like, now we're friends. And I felt like we were really friends. And then I clicked on her profile picture and saw that her cover photo was of a Hamas militant launching a Qassam rocket. And I had this, like, strange reaction of, whoa, like, what is this? And I was living in Israel during the war with Gaza in 2013 and experienced running to bomb shelters when there were sirens. And so that experience of fear has a really powerful reverb for me. And then I had this realization of, okay, it's scary for me to see a picture of someone launching a Qassam rocket, but also it's probably scary for people in Gaza to see pictures of Israeli soldiers holding an Israeli flag or walking on the street with their M16. And it sort of led me to have this realization that there are a lot of people around the world who throughout history have experienced that same fear and that same threat, and that that is what makes the efforts of Bahlul and Sudan so powerful, that they are able to overcome this fear and teach language in order to create understanding and relationships, also to protect and defend themselves. Like, the idea of defending and protecting your country is not a contradiction to building human understanding and relationships, and that the two can exist together. בסירת עץ קטנה מיטלטלת מים סוערים לא ויתרת לא אמרת נואש והלב שלי חזר לפעום מחדש.
Shana Shili spent part of this year in Israel with visits to the occupied territories. She's studying journalism, as well as Arabic and the Middle East at UC Berkeley. You can see some of her snapshots of Sobi Bahlul, Arik Sadan, and their students at pri.org/language. If you like this World in Words podcast, there are plenty more at all the usual places. And at those usual places, if you have a moment, please write a review of the podcast. Reviews mean a lot. Thank you. You can find us on Facebook at the World in Words page, also on Twitter at LingoPod. I'm also on Twitter at PatriCox, PatriCox. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.